Get those searchlights up on the tower. Right now. Move! Move!
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
Hello, I'm Herb and welcome to Community Spotlight. Each week I invite a person or an organisation into the studio to talk about their journey or their events. Today I have Emma Davis. Good morning, Emma.
Good morning, Herb.
Thanks for coming in on this cold, wet Armidale day.
Beautiful Armidale morning. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So tell me, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Canberra, actually. Similar climate. Most recently been living in Yass, down near Canberra as well.
Now, you tell me that you did an equine degree at Wagga first up.
Yeah, I'm a horsey girl through and through. I grew up in the suburbs of Canberra, but pretty early, about 8, I decided that I wanted to ride and started riding, and horses was all that I knew I liked. So I followed everyone else to university and did a year at the ANU in Canberra, and then a philosophy actually, and then quit university because it wasn't interesting enough, and someone had said, there's a horse degree in Wagga. So I said, what's a horse degree? And they said, come to Wagga, we're having lots of fun playing in Wagga. They were doing other courses and there was really a course there, so I got into that.
And then you moved or encouraged to go to vet school at Sydney Uni.
Yeah, I wasn't much of a student. I travelled to the States on exchange in year 11 and 12, so I didn't get a very high tertiary score. I did a lot of more studies in year 11 as well before I went overseas. So I didn't have the 99s that you need to get into vet usually, a really high university score. And I wasn't much of a student, but I loved horses. And we got up to reproductive physiology and exercise physiology in my horse course. And all of a sudden I kicked in. I got interested. And my teacher saw me and she was a vet. And she said, why don't you become a vet? And I said, oh, no, I'm not smart enough to do that. And she said, I think you might be. And I travelled for a year to England, to the Queen's National Stud in Newmarket in the UK. And then I applied over there and got into vet school, which was amazing.
I heard that veterinarian course of study is actually more than a human doctor.
It can be. It depends on the year. Wraps up there with law and vet science and medical science are the hardest courses to get into. It just depends on the demand. So the score gets higher as more people want to get in. So, but luckily they had a few spots. I started in 97, so they had a few spots for mature age students. So they did things like interview us, do other tests, see what we'd done so far. And yeah, so my passion and interest in horses got me in.
And how long was the vet degree?
5 years at that time, yeah. So I restarted another degree. So I was 10 years at uni all up. It's a lot.
Well, I think there's some similarities with what I've done with university. Mm. I think I was 7 years.
Yeah.
And as a mature age student here in Armidale.
Yeah.
And probably the same process to get in.
Yeah, yep, yep.
Convince them that you were worthy.
Yeah, that's right.
So tell me, you came out of vet school and then you went and practiced.
I did 5 years practice. I had come in with my eyes solely on horses. But in my last few weeks at first degree in Wagga, the first Hendra virus cases came out. And for anyone who remembers, Vic Rail up in Queensland was a horse trainer who died of this unknown virus, and the horses had given it to him. A number of his horses died and then he died. And I was kind of interested in, wow, how did this man die? And there's a disease that we don't know anything about. So, and then I went off to vet school, did my 5 years. So we did more and more science on Hendra virus and these crossover diseases like COVID that we've just all lived through.
This is the bat virus.
Yeah, the bat virus. And we just had another case up in Queensland in the last 2 months as well, actually. But a really deadly virus for horses and humans if they are infected. So anyway, that was in the background. Did my vet, followed horses into practice and worked in a number of practices, 3 in my first year, actually. But all had horses, and then I went off and did mixed practice, which is where you do horses and cattle and small animals as well. So that was my second year.
So horses, no surprise then that you've now recently moved in the last 3 years. You've moved to Armidale.
I have. Brought me here.
One thing is you've got a young girl and she goes to NEGS.
Yep, to NEGS.
And also you came up for a government job.
Yep.
Tell me about the Horse Equine Centre at NEGS.
Yeah, well, I had never been to Armidale until I came up for DPI to speak at a conference for the vets we were having. And I had a lovely couple of days staying at Tattersall's Hotel and walking in the mornings, and I thought, this is a beautiful town, it's lovely. And then on the way out of town up to the airport to fly back down to Yass in Canberra, I saw this school with two horse arenas indoor, and I was like, my head turned around really quickly and I was like, is that a school with two indoor arenas? Oh my God. And 18 months later we moved here. So yeah, I loved it. I loved Negs. I then met another vet whose daughter was here, and I was running some weekend courses for vets with all the horse vets actually, and for a UK company, that's another story. But it was a lovely daughter who was 15 at the time, able to hold a beautiful conversation, and, you know, who was lots of raucous vets out at dinner with her. Her dad was an industry vet and me running the show. And I said to him after one night, I said, gosh, she's a credit to you, Michael. She's a lovely girl. I hope my daughter is like that when she's 15. And he said, oh, no, she's a credit to Negs. I said, what is this Negs? So, and, yeah, so that's how we ended up here.
Jazzy is in year five.
Yeah.
She rides with my Destiny, who's in year six.
Yeah, they love it.
And they have fun in the group lessons on a Monday, or it was on a Monday afternoon.
Yeah, and she's about to do her first boarding for the next 2 weeks. Go off while I do some coaching courses. So she's going to move in and be a boarder. She's very excited.
Oh, she's a pretty independent girl.
Yeah, she's good.
And I think that's the thing that Negs, that's what I feel, or my wife and I feel, is that bringing out confident, well-adjusted girls into women, they can take on the world.
Definitely.
And I think if they manage the world, it might be a better place than it is today.
Yeah, that might be the side.
Our hope for the future. I had a business, I must have been back in Yass, the veterinary career and business coaching.
Yeah, so I was 5 years in practice, and there's this thing in the vet profession that lots of vets do a 5-year degree and then they do 5 years in practice and then they leave the profession. And, like, I left practice after 5 years. I'd done a lot of on-call for those first 5 years, and I was going backwards financially and I was a bit exhausted and hadn't found my spot in vet practice. But I saw these cool government jobs come up, and you could fly around in a helicopter up the top of end of Australia shooting, darting cattle and testing them for these diseases and testing for things like the Hendra virus I already discussed. And they said, come and be a vet in government and you can be a real vet on the weekends. And so I thought, oh, that's not... And it paid quite well. So I was like, oh, that's not a bad idea. So after 5 years in practice, I went to federal government and have been a government vet most of my career since that time. So I've worked on diseases like bird flu up in Indonesia and Papua New Guinea. And then because of my horsey theme, after we had equine influenza in this country come in and we got rid of it amazingly, then I was on the team to fix up our import conditions. So all of that, I left practice. I felt like I'd failed as vet because I wasn't going to be in practice anymore. But I needed to do it. I needed to clean up, you know, get better financials. I had this other interest in these biosecurity diseases. I had to get some sleep. There was some good things and some bad things. But I noticed that a lot of people left the profession. They didn't just go to government vet, or they actually just left and did something else. I know vets that have gone off to do medicine after they've studied vet, so that's a lot of uni. So I started a career business in 2014 on my maternity leave. And yeah, I thought, we've got to let people know about the career options there are for vets. I've had this brilliant career. It's been different to what I planned at the start, but I've been travelled around the world and met some really interesting vets working in different spaces. Actually, the Chief Medical Officer of Australia a couple of years ago was a vet. And so the Chief Veterinary Officer of Australia and the Chief Medical Officer of Australia had both had veterinary degrees at one time. So there's these really interesting careers. So I started a website, veterinarycareers.com.au, with a couple of my colleagues, because I didn't know anything about business at that time. And then about all of us, we had networks around the world, the three of us, and people were asking us, well, that's a great job, but how do I get there? And so a few years in, I learned about coaching. And so now I coach people through their career transitions and also to do business better as well now.
Now, we're going to delve into a little thing about veterinarians that people probably don't realise, that the suicide rate in veterinarians is 4 times the national average.
Yeah, it is.
So just on that note, I'll issue a bit of a warning. So the next part of this podcast may discuss suicide and suicidal thinking. And if you need help, please reach out to one of the following for support. One is lifeline.org.au, national charity, 24-hour crisis support. You can ring them on 13 11 14. The other one is Beyond Blue, free telephone, 24/7 again. No matter how you are, who you are, how you're feeling, you can reach out to a free counselling service at beyondblue.org.au. And their number is 1300 224 636. And I'll repeat that after this podcast. So the suicide rate in veterinarians, why is it four times the national average?
Yeah, thanks, Herb. So this suicide problem in vets is in Australia and a lot of the Western countries. It's the same. It's really high suicide rate in vets and vet nurses. And I've been fascinated by it, and it was one of the drivers to start my career website, because I felt really like a failure as I changed from practice into government. And I was so happy when I got there and I opened the doors and there was 310 vets doing the most amazing, interesting work. And I was so relieved that I'd found a place that suited me. And meanwhile, this has been an issue for, I'm not sure, 30 years or something, the suicide rate, really a long time. And I know people who have, I guess, gone through transitions or felt under pressure and have ended their life. And I remember that feeling of all I want to be is a vet. And the, also the feeling of maybe I'm not going to be a vet anymore if I change. And it was very scary because there's a lot of identity in your work. It's really hard to get there. There's a lot of interest in your role as a vet. And in my class at uni, when we were there in the first class, the teacher said to us, who's here because of James Herriot? And you know, if you know All Creatures Great and Small. And that was, you know, some very famous stories about a UK vet. And about 3/4 of the class put their hand up. And these All Creatures Great and Small is like a really romantic view of what it's like to be a veterinary professional. And his boss was a bit crazy, and he was always out in the mud in the middle of the night in the ice, and he was doing the hard yards, and he never slept, and his car was breaking down, or he didn't have any air in his tires, or he was, you know, it was just mad. And then these clients were quirky and odd and didn't pay or did pay or paid him in a, you know, a carrot stew or something. That it was all just really fascinating stories, very quirky. So we kind of had this idealized kind of thinking about what we were getting into, but the reality of vet is very different. It's kind of quirky as well. It's very odd, and there's some weird bosses out there. But now looking back, I can see that there's probably a high level of neurodiversity in the vet profession that we haven't been aware of. And so people who are autistic or on the ASD spectrum can be very black and white in their thinking and maybe not have the best people management skills. And I wonder now, looking back at some of my bosses when they would just have meltdowns, they'd just have a 2-year-old temper tantrum. And one of them, I think, was injecting horse steroids into himself, so he looked buff trying to attract a wife at the same time. You know, these really odd behaviours that now I can kind of look back on, and I wonder whether these people were neurodiverse. Yeah, my first boss, I've got to tell you this story, Herb, this is a good one. If you wonder why I left practice, my first boss, who was my childhood vet, who I adored, loved him, thought he was, you know, the bee's knees, and it's in my book, I'm writing a book about it, names have changed, but after working there for 2 weeks, we were going to see an eye on a horse and a racehorse. It was important to focus on eyes when we were driving there. And he started quizzing me about horse legs and how many textbooks I'd read since I'd left uni 3 months ago, and whether I was keeping up and whether I'd be enough and what I could recall about horse legs. And I just looked at him and I was like, but we're talking about eyes at the minute and I'm focused on fixing this eye. And he said, well, there's something wrong with the way you think. You'll never make a vet. I was so crushed. I was 6 weeks in. I'd come off holidays for him and I was doing everybody's after hours. They all had holidays while I was there. I was brand spanking new. I needed support and I needed encouragement and more training, really, like training in the field. But instead, he basically cursed me and said, you'll never make a vet. And with a more, like with a better self-esteem, that maybe some people would brush that off. But from where I'd come in life, I didn't have that really robust self-esteem, and that really hit me.
So just let me unpack something for a minute. So you've talked about a romantic view of becoming a veterinarian, and it's not basically all that romantic.
Yep.
You talked about some quirky people in the as veterinarians. But to me, if you're going to be a veterinarian, I would have thought you're entering because your focus is on animals and helping animals. Mm. It's not like a doctor helping humans. Mm. And I think you said something to me a while ago is that a lot of them don't have good people skills.
Mm.
So when you add those two things together, and I think you've explained about people skills or given some examples of people skills, the fact that people enter wanting to focus on animals, they don't have good people skills, particularly, and, you know, we've taken animals to the vet to be put down or they've been sick with a life-ending disease or something and the vet can't fix them. So there must be a lot of trauma on the vet. Not only that the animal that they are there to help ends up dying or whatever happens to the animal, but then the people would be blaming the vet that
really
they couldn't
messy
fix
situations.
It.
Yeah, it gets really messy. And that's the thing about vet is in vet practice, no day is the same. And basically you have to be ready to do anything. Anything can come at you, be it a ferret or a cat or someone's beloved dog. And, yeah, with the animals comes the humans. And we experience a lot of trauma on their behalf, both the animals and sometimes people, you know, most people look after the animals as best as they can and they really put good effort into them. But, of course, there's cases where they don't and we're trying to advocate for the animals and the people are difficult. And then there's all this misunderstanding and miscommunication and hurt feelings because these people are bringing their pets, which are part of their family, into practice. And maybe they don't like, you know, they don't like the costs associated with medicine or they are just emotional and really hurting that, you know, that they are going to have to face putting that animal down. And oddly, some of the worst cruelty cases I've seen have been people trying to keep their animals alive for a really long time. And a case comes to mind of a really elderly cat and a beautiful old lady who really wanted her cat to keep going. And this cat needed so many injections and so much therapy and was skin and bones, basically. And the quality of the animal's life was not there. But this lady's attachment to it, she had based her mental health on this animal being alive. And so I think we stretched it beyond what was right for that cat to look after the lady. And so that cat then became a part of her treatment. But that's not, we take an oath as vets to look after animal welfare first. And it gets really tricky and really messy. So, and it's misunderstood. And it's, I think in Australia particularly, we don't have a good understanding of the true costs of medicine because we've got a Medicare system for people. Medicine is really expensive, medicine and surgery. So, yeah, so I've worked in practices where vets didn't charge much, but they didn't offer that good a service as they could have maybe. And also their staff were the ones who are not being paid well. And so basically we're supporting the community by not paying. It's really messy, really confusing, complex.
So, you mentioned that cat situation. I have a similar experience from a person I knew whose dog was the, you know, he lived for his dog and basically said to the vet, do everything you can to keep him going. You know, I can't lose him. But invariably, and he spent a lot of money and invariably the dog died in the end. But then he was very bitter. And I think he probably still is very bitter, but it was his blaming the vet. Not only for the, and I think this is what you're talking about, not only for the cost, not only the cost of treatment, but the dog died in the end anyway.
It's very hard to swallow. It's a very difficult.
The vet's there to try and look after the animal the best they can, but invariably it's got to be put down, and that's a whole lot of trauma on everybody. The owner
plus... It's vicarious trauma, isn't it? It's like, empathetic people, and vets are often very empathetic people. That's why they've gone in to look after animals and gone into that caring role. Empathetic people can pick up vicarious trauma, so it's like bathing in trauma. And so that's what I coach on, is basically self-care, how to have good boundaries on your time. There's perpetual need. There's just animals everywhere. If it's not the people with their animals, it's the animals that don't have homes and are often dropped at a vet clinic. And I mean, I remember one of my first roles, I had to euthanize a mum and her puppies, you know, and 6 very healthy Kelpie pups in one of my first roles. And so for me personally, that's trauma that I if I think about it, I can tap into the angst around that. That was really traumatic for me to have to do that, but that was my job and my role, and my boss told me I had to. Now, and again, I wasn't that confident when I was a young vet. Now I would probably push back and get somebody else to do that. We're put into all these ethical situations, and not just one a year, but every day there's something different. And so it's easy to get burnt out, and without really good boundaries, easy just to overgive and overgive. And
so let's just move away from that trauma and the impact of the daily grind of the veterinarian back into your veterinarian career and business coaching.
Yeah.
So you're going to restart that now. You're moving away from the government job that you came to Armidale for.
Mm-hmm.
You're moving into that coaching role again. Now tell me, before you had a lot of clients all mm-hmm. over the world?
Yeah, I've coached vets. I only coach veterinarians. I did try and coach other people, but I'm not as good as that. So I coach veterinarians in mindset and career and business. And yeah, I've had clients in Africa, in the UK, in Ireland, back to New Zealand, lots across the US. But we've run a big international conference with vets, myself and two other coaches, one in the UK and one in America. We ran a 5-day online conference for 365 speakers and 1,000 paid participants and 25 industry sponsors. So yeah, veterinary careers is a hot topic. So I'm looking forward to getting back into that and supporting people. I do it online, obviously.
Well, that's the beauty of the internet is you've got the world at your fingertips.
Mm, yeah, that's right. I can be part of all these different conversations. When we ran our big career thing, because of my government background, I interviewed the chief veterinary officers of 4 different countries in the same interview. That was a great... I mean, I was hosting a panel, so they got to answer everything, but that was, a career... to be.
Any thoughts about bringing a conference here to Armidale? Because we've got all the facilities.
Great. I love it. Well, that's what drew me here, is this beautiful town. So, I definitely am open to those opportunities. Yeah. And that Veterinary Association, which I'm a big part of, I'm part of the New South Wales and we run conferences. So, I could pitch it to get us up here.
Well, we could certainly here at the radio station do some interviews. We're all nice. About content.
That'd be great.
Generating content. And if you did something here in Armidale.
I'd love it. And I love it. I've got a little B&B up here and we had a lovely IT manager and his wife. Kids come up on the weekend just for a country escape up in Armidale. So that's great. I'm going to start advertising that and get more people up. So,
So the book, you mentioned the book. So you're going to get this book up and running. This has been in the pipeline for a while.
Yeah.
Tell me what the book is. I sort of got a bit of a feel for it.
It's got a working title around Women Vet Manifesto. I'm not quite sure what that means, but it's basically like our profession is now feminized. It used to be male dominated. In the last 30 years, it's switched over. Vet schools have 95% females going through them. At one stage, it was 99%, and they had to make it that they would have 5% males just to make sure we had some males coming in. So it's just a hugely changed profession. It's a traditional profession that hasn't kept up with the world, and so there's a lot of change needed in how we regulate the profession, on the support systems, on the business models. I just met with a vet lady yesterday who is doing part-time work like locuming. They've got her doing 11-hour days for 5 days in a row for the next 6 weeks, and she's scared, and but she signed up to it. And so I need to help people manage that and think about things like the physios. When they became a feminized profession, a lot more females started businesses together and worked part-time. And so they might have 5 people doing a three-person job, and they share that role a lot better. So they share around their responsibilities and stuff. So the book's got all these ideas about my learnings from coaching. I've coached coached one-on-one 100 people, around 100 vets now for 3 months to 3.5 years. And I have interviewed nearly 400 vets for at least an hour, just to not like you're interviewing, but like hearing their career story. So I've just got this really interesting perspective of the profession. And so I've put that into a book, and I'm doing a book writing retreat next week so I can get it finished. And then I'm speaking to it at the Vet Expo in September down in Melbourne.
Well, when you get the book ready to launch, maybe you should come back in and we could hear from Dr. Emma Davis about the book and with the working title, The Women's Manifesto in a Veterinarian Career.
Yeah.
So I think we might pull it up there. I think that's been a great interview. And just a reminder, I'll go back. If you need help, please reach out to either Lifeline lifeline.org.au. 24-hour crisis support, 13 11 14 is the number. Or Beyond Blue, another free telephone service, 24-7, beyondblue.org.au. Phone 1300 224 636. So thanks very much, Emma, for coming in, and I wish you all the best with the book.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Herb. That's great.
Thanks very much, Dr. Emma Davis, telling us all about veterinarian career and her journey from originally Canberra up to Armidale and her love of negs. And that's Community Spotlight.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast. I listen to 2ARM 92.1 FM in the car and at work for great tunes and community news.